The first set of graphs that we see here, it's plotting latency as a function of time for every workload and every phase. So the first thing that we see is the inserts for workload A, then the updates, and then the reads. For workload A, there are two phases, right? There's the load phase and the execution phase. The first insert is what is the load phase, and then the execution phase is composed by updates and reads, 50-50. Updates and reads.
Oh, reads, sorry. Okay.
So what we see here is latency, how latency varies over time, and the plot, and we get an experimental point every 2 seconds.
Okay.
And we see that in general, level DB, it fluctuates periodically. Whereas in the case of DirectQV,
which is the green line,
level DB is the blue line.
DirectQV is the green line.
DirectQV is the green one, and we see that it's a lot more stable and also lower latency.
I think so. It's too good to be true.
Well, the good thing is that I can share all the source code and I can verify.
I'm just making a calm observation. Don't talk. Okay, and I shouldn't be joking. Okay.
Continue. Okay, so I did the same analysis for every workload. And this is the data that I already collected last week. These are for the 10 weeks working set. So if we go up for the workload B, we see that in the load phase there's a similar trend, and the updates and reads, it changes the pattern, but still there are some spikes. And in the case of DirectQV, it's lower latency, a lot more stable in general.
Let me ask: is the load phase similar across all the workloads? Do you see it being similar?
I believe that is the case. Yes.
So YCSB does basically the same thing for each workload in the beginning.
Hello. I'm so sorry I'm late.
No problem.
That's okay.
I'm sorry. As usual, you know, there's been non-stop firefighting all day. I love the spikes.
The spikes are level DB, the green one is 10 years KV.
No way!
Exactly, I said it's too good to be true.
You know, every time I get data from level DB, I think it's too good to be true, and then they keep coming.
Yeah.
And they're all bad.
Yeah, this is workload A that we discussed. We moved to workload B.
Well, let me ask a question. This is with level DB in sync mode, right?
This is sync mode.
This is sync mode.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. I just think async is equal. Well, not equally, but async is also quite crappy.
No. But I have some other results to share that it gives me hope that when I run the same experiment with async, we should get similar results.
Yeah.
But this looks promising.
Yeah.
Continue to hope for bad data from level DB, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
What was your question?
So that question is, do you have some insight as to what is in level DB's architecture or design that is causing the spike? Do you have any sense of it?
I don't know, but since it is periodic, I'm assuming that the rate at which data is being added is causing the migration of data from one level to another periodically as well, and that's why we see the spikes periodically. That's
but
why.
The level of level city.
Yes. Right. The tiny spikes in DirectQV, I have no clue why that happens.
Yeah, I also don't know.
Due to collisions and stuff, but yeah, it's hard to quantify.
Yeah.
By the way,
before I forget, Leo, I inquired about getting you an internal build. I was told that FIO status as SJ will allow you to track the physical bytes written to the drive. So if you have the ability to track logical bytes written through, you know, through the cache or through the application layer, and you can periodically use FIO status as SJ to track physical bytes, which will then give you the write app.
Mm-hmm.
That should be able to get you what you need without you having to load another driver.
Okay.
Maybe you can give that a shot, and if that doesn't work, I will go back and request.
So it's FIO status, and what's the flag?
Dash FJ.
Okay.
S as in Sam, J as in John.
Great. I'm going to give it a try and let you guys know.
Okay, thank you.
Do you want to look at any other workload in particular?
Yeah. Well, I do. If we go, I think workload E.
Mm-hmm.
There's something weird going on there. Yeah, here. You see that in workload E, in the latest one, it's the scan phase.
Mm-hmm.
The scan latencies that I'm getting are single-digit latency.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea why that is, because I haven't changed the code to use the caching. I don't know why this is. This is
so the workload E also has a load phase, which is the first plot. And then the execution phase has two sub-phases.
Right. There are some inserts and some scans.
Insert and scan. Okay.
Right.
And the insert is also, it seems like there's a huge, huge speed up there. Right?
I mean, single-digit latency?
Yes.
Is it really single or is it double-digit?
We can confirm or look at the data, but I think it's single-digit. It's about 9 milliseconds or something like that.
Micro.
Microseconds, yeah.
So 9 microseconds is not possible.
Yeah.
There's something
wrong. If it was like 15 or so, that's actually possible. 9 is not.
15 is too good to be true.
15 has been seen.
Okay.
Small writing.
It's a unicorn, okay.
It is a unicorn, but it has been seen. They have been sighting.
Okay.
So there's something wrong with the
sort of sighting 15 microseconds.
Does YCSB report any correctness information at the end?
Yes, YCSB does report correctness from the YCT point of view, and I see that in all cases it's returning the correct value.
Hmm.
And I ran these experiments a couple of times, and I get consistency the same result.
Hmm.
So I don't know if it's something in the layer that is connecting YCSB and LevelDB, and DirectKV. I have to look into it to see what's going on.
You mean that layer could be doing some caching?
No, maybe there's some correctness issue in the implementation. I don't know. I have to look into it because it's too low.
But insert is not cacheable, right?
No, insert is not cacheable. But I'm talking about in the scan phase, in the last graph.
Even insert is... Okay. What about insert time that you get? It's also single-digit microseconds, or...?
Let me.
The insert chart you have here, Leo, it does look like it's very close to zero, right?
Yeah.
For which one?
The scale is big that it could be.
The scale is allows to read whether it's single or double digit, but it is very close to zero.
Insert phase. Insert latency.
Yeah.
Or workload.
I don't know. I have to check. I'm trying to log in to see the raw data.
Is
the
raw data?
I think you already answered this. What Raju asked. It's basically LevelDB has a verification thing. So whenever you do a read or write, does it verify to see that the red data is what was expected by LevelDB too?
The YCSB layer, it does has a verification process. Every time that it performs an operation, it counts how many times the return value is zero, which is the correct value. And I checked, and I was getting all the time zero, which is the expected value.
Sorry, you said the count of the operation, not the actual data in the operation, right?
No, what it does is that it issues the operation, and if the return value of that operation is different than zero, then it interprets that as an error. What I'm getting is that every time I'm getting a zero, which means that the operation was correct.
So My CSV is just inserting zeros, is that...
No, that's... Okay.
I see what you're saying.
In the YCSB layer, right, it issues an operation,
mm-hmm.
and that operation returns a value of type integer.
Okay.
If that value is different than zero, then it's an error. Something went wrong.
Okay.
Either inserting or searching and updating. But every time I get a zero, which is interpreted by YCSB as a successful operation.
But I guess the question that Swami and even I was asking earlier was does YCSB does any verification on the values that it reads, I mean, of the data that it wrote? I mean, does it compare what it wrote with what it read back?
I don't know about that.
Okay,
I'm not sure.
For example, the fire utility that people mostly run, right? The flexible armor tester, it has a verification flag that if you set it, whatever it writes or reads, it actually verifies that it's the data that's expecting it to read.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I was trying to ask you, because other thing that we can also do is at the NVMKV layer, that since you have the code, you can always, once you write it, you can issue a read call after that to make sure that you read back the data that you actually wrote recently, just for sanity purpose. Even if YCSB is not doing it, we can add the simple check in our NVMKV so that we can guarantee that it's actually doing the writes and the latencies that we get are a correct measurements of it.
So,
because
Swami, I think you're pointing to as, you know, how can we debug this?
How can we debug? Actually, how can we validate that our data is right? That's not more like debugging, just validating.
Mm-hmm.
Because numbers are too good to be true, like...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I will say one thing, insert latencies which are under 15 microseconds, you know, unless the cache is somehow involved in capturing inserts, that's not possible. So that's definitely something. The general, you know, better performance of KV over level DB, you know, honestly, I see this in every level DB test we've ever seemed to come across. And, you know, so it seems at least repeatable.
Okay.
So, that one I'm less concerned about, you know, but the insert taking less, you know, 9 microseconds, that is just not possible.
Something else. You know, the scan should actually be unless everything is hitting the cache.
Is there any quick way to share a link so we all can look at the raw data? Because I have it here available.
Yeah. So I actually have the webex, so if you actually join the webex, go to the link I emailed you from the webex, you can actually start the Cisco webex session and you can actually share your desktop and stuff.
Well, okay. That would mean you would have to do it.
No, we can do it from there.
What? Because the link is public, is it? Oh, okay.
Yes, the link is public.
Yeah.
So we don't need screen sharing. We just need to share a link. So we can just...
Share a link.
Send
email.
An email.
Yeah, just email us the link and we will click on it.
Sorry. I just said you want to share the screen. Sorry.
Can you send an email?
Yes, I'm going to send an email.
Yeah, so it seems like RocksDB is really rocking relative to LevelDB. So
I think it's going to be the one to beat. So at some point we should look at that. Now, the thing that struck me when I looked at it is, the RocksDB was screaming, but why were they running those particular tests?
Yeah.
Those particular tests look very, specific somehow. They were loading up a million keys.
The numbers that we were looking at are those synchronous writes, right? Sync. Okay.
Sync. Yeah.
So that's 256 sync.
Yep.
For workload E.
E. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the one.
Yeah, I was also curious about why they're why they're focusing on the bulk load of large number of keys. And I didn't have any context to determine if that really is the right thing to do or evaluate or not. You're thinking along the same lines as me, which is, did they cherry pick the tests to do this contrast?
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I mean, one reason to do it is that maybe that is the test they care about inside Facebook. That's quite possible.
Mm.
Another possibility is that they cherry pick the test, right?
Mm.
So, but I mean, it looked for me like a very, very particular test. It didn't have any sort of generic nature to it. It wasn't a mix of operations,
Right.
System.
Sorry, what did you want to look at?
Okay,
I
sent the email.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Neither have I. So, you're connected to the internet, right?
Yes. Yes, yes.
And sometimes I make that mistake. I think I sent out the email, but I didn't.
Anyway, while we get the email, maybe we can look at your graph.
Okay, so it seems like, I mean, in some workloads, direct KV spikes are more visible than others, and I think we still don't have any sense for where the spikes are coming from. Maybe does this new driver start help you with that at all, or? The physical layer.
No, the one I mentioned will not help with that, because the one I mentioned is an aggregate of physical data written.
Hmm.
So it will help us to understand write amplification in the two workloads. It won't speak anything to the spike.
It could, but I doubt it would, but unless you're not formatting it before each thing, one of the things that you would see from the stats is that if the GC is doing some activity, because of RevelDB's compaction process and stuff, you can actually get some inputs about, you can correlate with the CPU utilization along with IO thing that's going on. It is possible, but with 10 gig of data that you're writing, I doubt it will happen actually.
Yeah, that's the thing is that.
So 10 gig, that's the workload that we're using.
You get my email?
Current
gig. Yes. Let me just write.
No, let's go all the way down to the bottom.
That's the second execution phase insert. Right.
Right, yeah. So we want to look at, let's click on the second link that I sent you. The first one is a link to the folder, and the second one is specific file for that workload.
Yeah.
See, this is scan.
Yeah.
Oh, we're looking at scans, right?
Yes, a scan. Go all the way. No.
Didn't we want to look at individual numbers?
I want to show you the ones that...
Oh, the average?
Go all the way down. Okay, these are inserts. Keep going down.
All the way down.
Okay, scans. So,
this one.
Okay, here. So if we see that
the average is.
Oh, that's completely.
441.
441. Is it for Fusion or is it for?
That's for.
LevelDB.
Oh, that's LevelDB. Ah, sent you the wrong one.
Well, can we change some small thing up here in the link?
Yeah, if we open the other link, I have all the files there. I know it's kind of tricky, but...
This one?
Yes, so we want to look for workload E.
Okay,
so the one that says output... output 256 sync time.
Output.
Yeah.
Sorry, workload E underscore output underscore what?
LevelDB cache.
256 megabyte.
256 megabyte time.
Time.
Yes. Okay, time.
Okay, that one.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, now we are looking for
the same thing in scan.
Oh.
So, I guess I do have one. Which is these operations whose latencies are being measured here?
Mm-hmm.
What constitutes an operation?
What it does is that it tries to perform as many operations as it can, and then it calculates the average latency of those operations in intervals of 2 seconds.
Okay.
And that's
what I guess what I was trying to say. Yeah, go ahead.
So every 2 seconds, it reports the average latency of all the operations that were performed in the previous 2 seconds.
Okay. But what constitutes an operation? Is it a scan of multiple records? Is it a lookup of a single record?
Based on the description of this workload, it's a scan of multiple records.
Scan of multiple records. Yeah, because the only way I can think of, single-digit scan times is if something brought the data in and dumped it in cache.
Yeah. Well, it's not
like,
even...
But do instances put it in there?
Well, look at this.
Yeah, it's -4.
Well, the problem that
it's not
is,
even
if that's the case, the level DB should actually have it for cache too.
Yeah, that's true. There's no reason to believe we are more cacheable than level DB.
And it's a 10 gig data, and you're caching, and the cache includes this MP. So everything is not cacheable.
No. Is it possible? Is there a prefetch going on in any of these caches? Are they backup prefetching by any chance?
No, I don't think so. If I were to guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be available at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
Yeah.
It's possible that there might be an error in the interface that connects YCSB and DirectKB for the scan operation. That's my guess.
That could be what?
There is an interface that connects YCSB and DirectKB, right? That was written. Right? So if there's an error there, it's possible that it's returning saying zero, but nothing is happening. And that's why we're experiencing such a low latency. So,
I think that could be a very good possibility, actually. I think that is what is happening.
Right.
Sorry,
and,
guys, can you repeat that?
So the interface, that could be interface, the connector basically between YCSB and MEMKV for scan might have an issue. Even though it's failing, it's about returning zero after the certificate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so failures will absolutely explain this.
Yeah.
Right. And I did find a small error when I started doing these experiments on that very same interface. It was not in a scan, it was in some other place, so it's possible that there's another minor mistake as well. I'll look into that to see what's going on. But according to the latency that we're experiencing, it's very possible that that's what's happening, right?
The latency is not even single digit, is what I was telling you earlier. It's 0.0006 microseconds.
Yeah.
So that's like 0.6 nanosecond average latency. So something is
selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The maximum latency is 58 microseconds, which I guess that's reasonable. That's reasonable.
For me, yeah, that's a little long time for me, but it's not impossible.
Okay.
These are typically, about 60 or 60 to 75 is a pretty normal single-threaded, QDEM.
Okay. Shall we go back to the other graph?
Yeah, sure. Now, I mean, given that there is a problem here, what I'm concerned about is there a problem somewhere else too? I mean, in one of the other workloads. I mean, the data. I would be more comfortable trusting the rest of the data if we can figure out what's wrong with workload E.
yeah, absolutely, yes. So
the good news is that the insert code might not have. Looks like the numbers that you see are reasonable.
The
latency is 100 and some odd microseconds.
Those look plausible.
Yeah.
And there are no like unexpected dips, and the mins are are believable. If you see a min, Leo, anywhere that's under 20 for a write or under 50 for a read, watch out for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're saying writes are faster than reads?
Yes, because writes go they don't go to NAND directly.
I see.
So NAND writing is about 300 microseconds, but that's entirely deferred, so you never see that directly.
Okay, I see. Makes sense. Okay, so should we look at the next set of plots here?
But this one's the next set of plots is basically what we shown before, which was the runtime and throughput. And by the way, the numbers that I was sharing were only partially correct because I was also sharing not only the runtime and throughput, but also min and max latency and average latency, and that was incorrect.
Oh.
Because while YCSB reports, it's the runtime and throughput overall of the two phases, load and execute. The information about specific latency values are for a phase of the execution or the load. Does that make sense? Like, we don't have information about the average latency for the entire load phase or the entire execution phase. We have average latency for either reads of the execution phase or writes of the execution phase and things like that.
Okay.
So
that's okay too. It's going to be a big issue, right?
Yeah, I think as long as we can, you know, do a correct apples-to-apples comparison so that we are comparing kind of the same elements of work, right?
Right.
Their duration, I think it's okay however they're broken up.
Right, so what we have here, this set are basically plotting runtime and throughput for both loading and execution phase. And there's nothing new here, it's just in a graph now. And at the end, I have a link to the raw data with the summary report that I was sharing before, because that one contains information about the cache misses and things like that.
So the workload E again will be problematic because it's... it's based on the same data.
Correct.
Time
yes,
series
it is
based
on the same data. Yes.
Okay.
Right. So the other interesting thing, you have something to say?
Leo.
Yes.
Sorry. If you go through the latency, I'm just jumping guns here. If you look at the latency graphs.
Latency.
Oh, you're missing some lines. Okay. Sorry. My bad. I saw a green and blue line. I thought I correlated with the earlier green and blue lines, but these green and blue are different.
Yeah, they have different meanings.
Oh, I apologize. So I was excited that at least there is some data that you see for here.
Some latencies that are not too low.
Yeah.
But no,
different data.
They are for the level DB.
Okay. Yeah, let's continue. Sorry.
So the correct way of interpreting the average latency and things like that, it's... Okay, let me back up. YCSB, as far as I know, produces outputs on two different formats. It gives you either a time series of latencies or a histogram, giving you distribution of the latencies for every subphase. So what I did was plotted the frequency of latencies for every subphase, and those are the new graph that we have here. The same workload, A and B, and these are the distributions of frequency. So the first one that we see here are, of course, inserts, updates, and reads. The inserts are the load phase, updates, and reads. And you see these are the latencies and frequency.
Why are there so many lines and not just two? One for direct queuing and
all? These are the workloads, right? We have two for...
they're different configurations.
Different configurations.
Yeah, so... Sorry, Leo, I just want to make sure we're on the same section of the doc as you. Are you looking at the latency cumulative frequency plots, or are you looking at the bar chart?
The latency distribution.
Okay, all right, we're scrolling down there now. Okay.
Right.
Got it. All right.
So,
So just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. So, yeah, the workload is listed there. The ones that say MK level DB or MK MDB, this is level DB, right?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, and then the three that say output LDB cache, those are MB and KB with the different cache sizes, including zero.
Yes.
Okay, good.
What is BC 1024 and WB listed?
That those are the buffer cache and the write buffer.
Oh, okay.
You can give them independent values, but I'm giving them the same.
Okay.
So I would like to get your input about this, but my interpretation of this is that if you get an skew distribution that is closer to zero latency, it's better.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So we see that for DirectKV, we get more skew distributions.
In terms of stability, yeah.
In terms of predict, yeah, stability of the latency values. So, I can't tell. Okay, so I'm looking at, for example, the chart on the third chart on the first row, which is reads for workload A. It looks like the DirectKV seems to be. Well, I don't know if it's more vertical, but it doesn't seem to be, I can't tell. There's a bunch of spikes over there that I'm not sure what they are, you know?
Yeah, you mean
not sure what,
between 10 and 100 latency?
Yeah, between 10 and 100, there looks like, it's like a little bit of a field of graphs of multiple color.
Yeah, I know what
and
you
And I don't
mean.
Know which chart, precisely which line that's coming from and what it means.
I'm not sure how to read this either.
Well, I think, I mean, from a distribution standpoint, you may get a certain picture, but we should probably also look at average values for each of these configurations.
Mm-hmm.
So distribution, we have a lot of variance with the cached. And also, I think the resolution of these plots can be misleading because we don't know how many latencies we get. Is this a line plot? It's a line plot, so
it connects it, right?
Yeah. The lines just get connected. It doesn't mean that you have values that are at 10 or 100.
I also wonder, Leo, if you can compute along with the average and standard deviation. It doesn't give you as much insight as the distribution, but it will allow us to do a quick measure of variability with just a single number for all of them.
You understand what I'm saying here? That this point is just connected to this. It doesn't mean that all of these points are actually valid. It's a line
plot.
No.
Yes, I see what you
mean. If you have all of the point length, unconnected graph would be awesome, actually.
So it's just points, instead of lines, points, it'll be better.
Okay. Nisha, but you say calculate the standard deviation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But doesn't that depend on the actual distribution?
It does, but
no,
it's
so
a summary.
Go ahead, Raju. I think you were going to say the same thing. Yeah.
I think the standard deviation will not have artifacts that are created by this plot, which is using lines, points. Now, this might give you a wrong picture because it indicates points that don't exist because it's just because a line passes through them.
I see.
So that's one issue. But you could also do the same plot with just points instead of lines points, and that would be clearer to understand because a point that exists in the plot is actually there.
Okay, maybe you also remove the logarithmic scale on X.
I think that would help too, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah. Getting rid of the logarithmic scale. I think that also visually indicate stability. Because here it's not, the logarithmic on X doesn't really tell you how much more stable direct KV is relative to 11 dB. It doesn't visually tell you the difference.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, with log on both sides, I mean, a small step in log is actually a big step in real.
Yeah. Yeah, especially on the x-axis, I think we can keep it linear scale.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is, I mean, if you want to do a cumulative, then a lines points plot would be okay. But since it is not, I don't think it is accumulative. Yeah, it is not accumulative.
So this is a frequency histogram, right?
Yeah.
Cumulative.
It's not.
Yeah, it's
right?
A histogram. It's not a
yeah.
Cap. Yes.
Yeah, and that's why it shouldn't be a lines points plot.
Yeah, and drawing a histogram with lines gives a misleading picture, you know. So if you can do either a cumulative or I would prefer just a cumulative. That would make more.
Yeah.
The other way to do it is to just do a histogram without lines, just as a bar histogram. But
yeah.
I would say everything considered a cumulative line would probably be just easier.
That's true. Cumulative plot would be better.
Okay.
Okay, so what's the last set of plots we see here?
That's a test in a smaller workload, because I was looking at the results and just the load phase takes about an hour for every workload.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that those are workloads of 10 gigs, and anything much smaller than that, it will fit in the file system cache. So I ran some experiments using half of the size, about 5 gigs instead of 10.
Hmm.
And these are the results that I got. In some cases we see some they were better and some others were not. So we are right there in the borderline, maybe we can make it a little bit bigger.
I think the real question here is, well, what does it take for LevelDB to not use the VFS cache? I think that's, or not have that play a dominant role in its performance. And that's why we made the data set bigger, right?
Correct.
And I'm expecting that as we make it bigger and bigger, the performance improvement of direct KV will proportionally increase. At some point, it's going to level off, though. So it's so at least for the timing, it seems like 5 gigabyte is out of the question, because we see some reversal in trends. Right, between 5 gigabyte and 10 gigabyte. Now, in 10 gigabyte, it seems like DirectKV does better in all cases.
Yes.
For all workloads.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But we don't have the async numbers yet.
We don't.
Okay.
I could try to get those. It would take, I would say, about a day.
Oh, one day. Okay, that's not bad.
Okay.
Hmm.
I think that would be useful, actually.
Okay, I'll do that.
We expect the async to run faster than the
I expect the async to run faster, yes.
Hmm. Now the question is, I guess it's for everyone, is does it make sense for us to explore other sizes for the data set? Maybe even higher than 10 gigabyte. Of course, it makes our experimentation more painfully slow, but I'm wondering what is it that we can state about our dataset size in the paper in terms of why we pick a certain dataset size.
Yeah, there are two things that we can do, Raj. So we can definitely use this one saying that we wanted to avoid the implications of garbage collector. So we just wanted to, if there is no garbage collector running, what is the performance of the device? That is what we can do with smaller data sets. So it's still going to be useful.
Mm.
That we can try to isolate the impacts of other things that's going on the device.
Mm.
And then once we run a larger, much larger workload, then it's going to be just a cumulative result, and we can't really dig down into why it is actually bad or not. Because when more factors are getting into, are being considered for larger size workload. It's really hard to pinpoint the problems unless we do a deep dive down into each of the individual aspects of it.
Right.
So I think this, we might be able to sell smaller size workloads too.
Well, one of the issues with going smaller than 10 gigabytes is that LevelDB starts benefiting from the VFS cache as well.
Yep.
And I think that's what we saw when we were doing 1 gigabyte data set, right? We have a whole bunch of data over there.
I think most likely what we need to do is, we don't have to run LevelDB every single time because we already have collected all the results. I think we only have to run NVMKV for different sets to find out what is happening, and then later on rerun LevelDB one more time, right? Or is it that we have to run it every single time for both the things?
Well, we definitely have to run the 10 gig with async configuration.
Hmm.
And so that we have a better point of comparison. Well, not a better, just a different point of comparison. And also, I would like to get the run those experiments that are using 1 gig of cache as opposed to 256.
Hmm.
Because those values are using 256 megabyte.
Yeah.
I think it's a more meaningful size of cache for that workload of 10 gigs.
Hmm. The cache
of
size.
No, but the other advantage is, basically, what you are trying to say is, if the data is not cacheable, right, or the cache is too small, how does it happen? It's one of the configuration points we're exploring right now. When you make it 1 gig, then it becomes comparable, and as long as the working set fits in, then we can have a different set of experiments to compare the results, right?
Yeah.
So those both the points are important, but I just think the 256 is still critical too, so that we actually can explore one of the other configuration points.
Yeah, I agree. I think both are important. And I think Leo is also, I don't think you're discounting the importance of 256 megabytes, right? You're just saying that 1 gigabyte would be an additional useful point to talk about. Okay. And for now, I don't see any strong reason for moving away from 10 gigabyte data set.
Yeah, let's try to understand these results first and then try to
increase
the database, if that's okay with you all.
I agree. I think we still need to work with this data set.
We have a better machine to run these experiments, but I decided not to do that until we have a good understanding of what's going on.
Hmm.
Because if I move to a different machine, it's going to be extra noise.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather stay away from that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably better to kind of stabilize on this setup with this data set so that if we have results that, we feel like we understand another machine or another data set, it'll just introduce new uncertainties.
Yeah.
Okay. So Leo, I guess we are talking about next steps, right? We need to run both the async configuration with the 256 megabyte cache, and as a next step, you want to run all configurations with 1 gigabyte cache. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And in parallel, we need to figure out what's going on with Workload E.
Yes.
And directly.
And before that, can we also add a simple sanity test to make sure that what you write is what actually got written? So a simple read after write kind of test, just we can add to either NVMKV interface, or either we can do it in the YCSB interface. So either way, it's okay, but just to make sure that all the data gets written, just one single test to be absolutely sure that the connectors and bindings are working correctly, and we actually write up all the data and read the data that we wrote. That would be a good experiment, actually. And then later on, you don't have to question again the correctness of the measurements, basically.
Yeah, it would be good to at least spend some time seeing if YCSB has an option to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might already have it, and then you don't have to write it yourself.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
that way, once you run all the experiments, all this work wouldn't go wasted if later point in time you decide that there is some small issue with the setting or connector that actually is giving wrong results.
Mm-hmm.
So we might save some time on that. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay. I think I know what I have to do.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
I guess we'll be meeting same time next week. Is that still
yep.
work for everyone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Works
for
me.
If you have any other questions or anything that you want to discuss earlier, we can actually talk or discuss before that too, in case you need. We don't want to wait until Tuesday, so let me know.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Yep.
Thank
you.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So that was a productive one. I think it's good we get to meet with them every week. We are able to find something which we won't be able to pick up, right? So for instance, latencies that are below a certain value shouldn't
yes.
even exist. That sort of stuff we won't know. Yeah, but the workload E results seem a little problematic. I hope the other results are okay.
I hope that too.
Otherwise, we'll have to run everything all over again.
Yes.
I mean, assuming that we can find what the problem is.
Yes.
So what is your strategy in figuring out where the problem might be? I would say, well, first of all, see if there is a integrity check in YCSB itself.
Yes. I'll do that. I'm gonna go straight to the plumbing that connects YCSB and.
But how would you know if it's working fine? Because it's not crashing or anything. I mean, you would have to actually read the code and understand the logic behind what's going on to figure
yeah,
out whether something.
There's no way around.
Yeah, that's.
But I don't expect that to be too complex.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's just a conversion of interfaces.
I see. Okay.
So hopefully it's not too complicated.
Hmm. Okay.
Besides, I don't think we have a choice.
Yeah.
I know that code was in GitHub somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'll check to make sure that maybe they have a newer version that fits those errors.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's important. I mean, that's an important step.
Yes.
To check if there are any updates.
Yes, yes. That will save you a lot of time.
Yeah.
So I changed this plots in a way that makes sense. What I wanted to show you before.
Which were not these plots? I thought this is what you said was cool.
Oh, yeah, no, but it's how I got it. It's, I'm sure you heard about Python, that is very easy and all that.
Yeah.
So they have this interface that you can actually combine Python code and Bash code. So yeah, you can list these files using Bash and then generate a list and then process that using Python code and call AWK. And then usually use the Python library to actually generate the plots, and it's all in the web page.
Wow.
They have an engine that you can connect to it.
What is this called?
It's Python.
It's just Python extensions of some kind? Or?
Well, this one's called IPython,
mm-hmm.
which allows you to... They have a terminal interface and a web interface.
Mm-hmm.
And you interact with Python from your web interface, and you can plot real-line and use syntax similar to MATLAB. It's all beautiful. It's very nice.
It is. Maybe you should do a tutorial sometime in the lab, because I think we can use this for many projects.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And all these things, it's safe as a JSON file, so like an XML file that has information about all the code, it's plain text file.
And these plots can be generated in any format you want.
Yeah, you can save it to a file in any format you want.
And these are GNU plots.
No, these are using the Python library to plot.
So, okay. But the Python is using gnuplot in the backend? Or?
No, it has its own library to generate plots, which is newer implementation of that, so some things are easier to do.
Oh, okay. I see. No, this is great. I think what we're missing is... I've been thinking about having at least maybe twice a semester some sort of group meeting where everyone talks about their work, maybe present something. I think that will be useful, and those sorts of sessions could also be used for this, for sharing unique tools like this.
Yeah, I think it's
so
really
I'll
cool.
Probably set something up for March.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. This is cool. Hi, Python. Should remember that.
This one's called a no-boot interface because the IPython is from the terminal.
Okay.
That's really cool.
And this one runs through a browser already?
Yes.
Okay.
And because it has a small web server that talks to Python directly, this one is running on my machine down there, but I can access it from here.
Okay.
That's really cool.
So you can also access all the data on that machine. You don't have to transfer any of the data.
No, it's all there in that machine.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Great. How's everything going with you? How's the semester?
We just started, but since that... Oh, yeah, really quick about the algorithm class.
Uh-huh.
It gave a list of projects.
Yeah.
Did you finish reading about the cache project or not?
What? No. Oh, you mean the paper?
The paper, yes.
No. I that was one of the things that I wanted to do after I finished writing this proposal. But what I'll do is I'll read that paper, hopefully over the weekend, and find out what exactly they're doing, and see if the idea that I have, I think it's worth exploring. Do you know Steve Lyons? He's one of the undergrads. He's actually really good. It's actually part of his work. He started work on that project, basically making the case or doing some data analysis to see if this whole idea actually makes any sense.
Okay.
From a workload standpoint, because we are making, for that idea to work, there are certain assumptions with respect to how data gets access to that needs to be validated, needs to verify. And that's what Steven has been working on. And he's gotten pretty far. So hopefully, I'm meeting with him today evening. So maybe he'll have some data. He's still working towards getting the first round of data. But once we have that, then I'll know that whether this idea makes sense or not. And I'll also look at the other paper, which... At least from the abstract, it seemed like they're doing something similar, but I'll read more carefully.
I see. Okay.
So that's, if that project works, I think that's a really good algorithms project. It's perfect for that course. Besides that, I don't have anything else in mind.
Because the one that he proposed are basically implementing algorithms that have been proposed in papers. So it's nothing that is necessarily new, but implementing those ideas and maybe testing at larger scale.
Sure.
Which I think is a good exercise. It's a good programming exercise, but if I can do something that's closer to my research, it's probably better.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how close the caching algorithm would be to your current work, but it's would be the general area that you're reading.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, will you send me the link to that paper? Is that available?
It is available. I actually read it, but the thing is, I read so many things in a day that if I don't put it somewhere, I'm sure I emailed that link to myself. Right? But now I have to search through my email to find it. That's the only problem.
But I'm sure I'll be able to find it.
Okay, sounds good.
But if I find it, I'll send it to you.